I wanted to ask you about your parents before you were born and when you were born. What was the life situation in your family?
Yeah, there was generations of addiction and dysfunction in my family. My dad came from a household of alcoholics, but it was casual. You know, they were high functioning alcoholics. And then my mom came from a side that was very addicted to drugs. And so they were both very troubled teenagers. And I was a result of that love relationship. You know, she fell for the bad boy and they got pregnant when my mom was 17 going on 18. So I was kind of the result of this continued dysfunction. But yeah, God had a plan, even though they didn't plan for me.
Your mom was 17. Your dad was also very young when he had you, right?
Yeah, I think he was around the age of 21. He had just gotten back from the army and they met at a concert, I guess. And he beat up her boyfriend and swept her away. And that was the start of their relationship. But they were never married. They were just together for a few short years. And they tried to raise me. They moved into the trailer park with me to kind of have a home on their own. But there was just so much. My dad was still going to strip clubs and lying and cheating and drinking and stuff like this. And so my mom finally left when I was 3 years old.
Your mom also had her own issues, though, too, because you mentioned you were in poverty and she was trying to pay the bills. And she was doing a lot of things that you definitely got into later in life and you wouldn't recommend. So what did your mom's life look like at that time?
Yeah. So when my mom left, so because she got pregnant with me so young, she ended up having to drop out of high school. So I think she finished her GED later, but she just really like was a girl who struggled with her self-worth and didn't really see that she would be able to do anything in life. And so having a baby, she ended up back in the strip club thinking that this was the only thing that she could do to make money. And it was here that, you know, drugs and everything else started to become a bigger part of her life. This is where her heroin addiction started. I think she started sleeping with the boss and she started becoming a sugar baby as well. And just all these things where her life just began to get chipped away. And so she left me then with my dad, because now she was getting heavy in her addiction and in the fast life and in the strip club and all of this stuff. So she left me with my dad and his parents. So I grew up mostly with my grandparents raising me, and my dad was my dad, but he was also kind of like my tyrant older brother at the same time.
Mm. Yeah, we'll get to more about what your dad did to you and that relationship, how it went down. But before we get there, I want to ask you, what did your parents believe in? Because you mentioned that they were Christians, but you also mentioned heroin addicts and going to the strip club. How did that work?
So I feel like to answer this question, it does kind of encapsulate much of my young childhood, because, you know, this was my whole young childhood. Is my parents, they considered themselves Christians just because their families were, but we didn't actually have a church life or talk about God. Nobody strived to live like Jesus until it was like, I didn't even really hear about God until I started having these supernatural encounters. And then I started telling my mom about the ghosts that I felt in my room. She wasn't in my life much, but I was able to visit her like every other weekend for certain seasons throughout my life. The seasons that she was sober and around, I would be able to get visitations. And on one of these weekends, I did tell her about the ghosts. And so that was the first time her telling me that in the name of Jesus, you can demand these ghosts, what I thought were ghosts, you can demand them to leave. And so I learned about the cross and that sort of thing. But at the same time, you know, my mom is doing Ouija boards and trying to connect with her overdosed friends and loved ones. And so there's a lot of witchcraft intertwined within, you know, the lives of the people who were claiming to be Christians. And it was the same on my dad's side. You know, I always say they were opening all these portals to demons that I thought were ghosts, but they were opening them with the actual blatant witchcraft. And then the abuse, trauma, the substance abuse, all of these things open portals to demons. And so it was the same with my dad. The abuse was opening portals to these ghosts, or, you know, demons that I thought were ghosts, mm-hmm. and the substance abuse. And he would date a lot of girls from the strip club as well, who would also do tarot cards. And I'm sure they did Ouija boards and stuff like that too. So all of this stuff, I was seeing a mix match of witchcraft combined with Christianity, and then seeing no fruits of the spirit actually lived out. So Christianity was kind of a joke to me as a kid.
Right. I want to go back because you mentioned ghosts like it was a nothing burger, but that's a pretty important thing. You were seeing ghosts when you were really young. Now you know that they're demons, but I want to ask you, what exactly did you see? When did those experiences happen? Can you explain everything in detail so I can understand it better?
Yeah, I was reflecting on this with my husband. There's this movie, maybe it's The Nightmare Before Christmas, with the really tall, skinny, I don't know if his name is Jack, but he's like a skeleton sort of thing. This was basically like the first thing that I saw. He was super tall. People would kind of describe him like a slender man, okay. but he was all black. So he was different from the Jack character in that, like, this being didn't have a face. He was completely black, skinny, and his hands and legs ended in points. And he could like melt under the door and go into my dad's room. I saw that happen in the trailer park. I don't know if my dad was, you know, abusing one of his girlfriends or if he was doing drugs. He often did drugs in his room with the door shut. So maybe I was seeing the spiritual side of this demon entering at that time in which he was doing those things. But also as a kid, I was exposed to a lot of scary movies too. And so this could have been opening that portal as well. Like, I don't take that stuff lightly now. Like, I won't watch scary movies now because I do think that is also a portal opener. So this is one of the first things that I saw. And other than that, like that being specifically, I saw, like I said, I'd see him walk behind the trailer. I saw him melt under my dad's door. And then the final time I saw him was I was in third grade. And my dog saw him too. And so this kind of gives some validity to it, is I'm standing in my grandparents' front yard and my dog starts barking. And I see this being, just call him the Jack lookalike or Slenderman. He's running through the weeds and my dog is looking at him. And before he hits the highway, because they lived on a highway, he just poof and vanishes. And I never saw that specific being again. But this is just one example. Other than that, a lot of times it felt like a feeling or a presence of someone in the room that I didn't maybe see directly. And that was mostly my experience.
So you said third grade. So we're talking like 8 or 9, if my math is correct. And was that during daytime that you see this? You saw that with your own eyes. It wasn't a dream. It wasn't a vision.
Yeah. It started, I think we lived in the trailer park when I was in like kindergarten, and I continued to see that one until around third grade. And I'd seen him at night one time. I saw him in the house one time, and then that final time was in the middle of the day in my grandparents' front yard.
And at that point in your life, your mom had already left because she was addicted to heroin, but at that time, your dad got addicted to meth. And I want to ask you, how did that change your relationship with him?
Yeah, that's a good question, because when I was young, you know, my dad, like I was kind of like, I had a safe place, you know, like he was very abusive to his girlfriends. And I could tell he kind of hated women. Like there was just this thing, like he just, woman hater. But I was his little girl and I was always very protected and loved. And of course the discipline was, you know, probably inappropriate in how he would, you know, spank me as hard as he did as a little girl. But for the most part, I was the safe one. Like I could protect the girlfriends. If he was in the middle of beating them, I could, you know, scream, "Daddy, stop," and he would stop. We rode four-wheelers together, you know, ate French toast in the morning, would listen to Eminem in the car, like headed to grandma's house. Like we had a lot of fun memories and like we were best friends. But then as we moved out into this trailer on the hill, like this is where my life really took a turn. He kept getting in legal trouble for beating on his girlfriends. So he ended up wanting to move out of the trailer park and move a little somewhere more discreet. So this was this trailer out in the middle of nowhere. Now we're only a couple miles away from my grandparents, but this is where I think the meth addiction really picked up, because now there's no sort of accountability of the townspeople. He's just kind of out in the wild by himself. And this is where he started building a meth lab, and he met this woman who would become his wife and the mom to one of my sisters, my only sister on my dad's side. And they developed this meth addiction together. And it was like the more he got into meth, the more I lost him as my dad. He was no longer the sweet, loving, caring dad. This brought out a whole new cruel side of him, where the abuse started. I think I was around 10 years old when he started hitting me like a woman, like I was a full grown woman. And it was just like my life was constant terror. I would cry myself to sleep most nights because I could hear him beating the wife. And then if I ever said anything, there were times that I got thrown up against the wall or beat with the belt. It was just a constant fear zone with him the moment he started doing meth.
And it wasn't that long after that your dad went to jail for the first time. And I want you to tell that story from the beginning, because that was one of the most intense moments of your life. And I think it's just very interesting. So can you explain that whole story?
For sure. And I'll go back and say too, there were lots of times throughout my childhood that my dad was in and out of jail. But you can get bonded out from jail, but prison is next level. Like, you're in there for a while. So the first time he got sent to prison was when I was 13. So mind you, like going back, like living my whole childhood, for like 10 years in this fear and knowing, like I was living this double life at school. There were so many times I wanted to tell the guidance counselor. I would pace outside of her door wanting to just like share the abuse that was happening. I bought a track phone once from Dollar General so that I could tell my mom like when he was being abusive. And we had a police officer come to the house once, and my dad came out with me, so I wasn't able to get helped here either. So I just felt so helpless for so many years. Like, I wanted to tell and I couldn't. But then there was this ultimate climatic weekend. I think it was a Memorial Day weekend. And now I have a baby sister in the picture. I think she was about maybe a year old, because he got pregnant with this wife. And my stepsister and I, we had gotten so used to hiding whenever he sort of turned into one of his frenzies. So we would either climb trees and hide, or hide behind the pool, or like go out to the woods or something like this. And on this day, we were hiding behind the pool, and he had this old brown leather, like braided belt that he would use to beat us. And I remember hearing him crack his wife down in the kitchen with this belt, and my baby sister hit the floor, and we hear her crying. And this was just the breaking point for me, where I looked at my stepsister and I was like, you have to go right now. You have to run. And mind you, we lived out in the middle of nowhere. The nearest neighbor is like a quarter mile run away. And so she takes off out the yard, and I'm sitting behind the pool, and a few moments go by, I don't know, maybe a few minutes, and he opens the door to call for us, because he was always very paranoid. Meth makes you very paranoid too. Like, he would pace up and down the hallway with his gun, thinking people were outside watching him. And he would always have to check on us kids to make sure that we weren't gone or telling somebody. Like, I was never allowed to be involved in things at school, because he thought, like, if I'm gone from the house more than necessary, there might be a chance that he gets told on. So he opened the door to check on us and sees that only I'm there. And I remember him just telling me, like, I was such an effing idiot, and like, how could I let her go? And he had this face where he would just grit his teeth, and it was like the voice of the devil when he would speak. And his voice just like cracked like lightning as he was asking me where my sister was. And I was like, don't worry, I'll go get her. But really, in the back of my head, knowing this is my chance to run too. So I take off out the yard, and I'm headed towards the neighbor's house, and I get there, and they just happen to be having a family reunion, which is crazy because it's this elderly couple. Like, they're both like barely walking. They're so old. But they just happen to have the whole family over. And so I get to the door, And this whole room of just alarmed people are looking at me. And I come in and Norma was her name. She was like, your stepsister, she's in the back room. She's on the phone with the police. Come in, come in. And so I come in and I can tell my stepsister is like stumbling on the phone. And I take the phone, like I've been waiting for this moment my whole life. Like I know my address, like I'm ready to go. So I'm telling the cops where he's at and XYZ. And Norma comes back and she's like, it's not safe back here. There's too many windows. And so at this point, I didn't realize that my dad had come to the front door threatening the son-in-law that if he didn't send us out, he was going to go get his guns. So Norma knows this. She's trying to get us out of here. We all pile in the car. It all was happening so fast. But by this point, my dad had run back and he was bashing in all of their windows with his gun, with the butt of his gun. He was bashing in their windows. So we get in the car and we're going up the road on the phone with the police still. And they weren't able to find him for a while. And I literally saw him run into the woods. Like I knew he was on the run. So I had to sleep somewhere else that night. I think I went to my stepsister's dad's house. It was, which was a weird environment for me. Like I barely knew these people. But then my grandma came and got me and it was the next day now. And apparently my dad had bailed out of jail. And a lot of times my grandparents were enablers and they would bail him out of jail, you know, all the time. So I don't know if they're the ones that gave the money for this to happen, but his wife went and got him out of jail. And I see their candy apple red Cadillac come pulling in the front driveway of my grandparents' house. And I know he's coming for me because I was a part of telling on him. And he's walking up the steps just with this vengeance. And I can just see the aggression. And so I run around the island of the house because there was this little like center island separating the kitchen from the living room and the rest of the house. And we're going around and around in circles. And this house is tiny. So I run out the front door and I'm headed up the driveway. And like I said, we lived on a highway too. So there's all these cars going by and just like a part of my child self wishing like somebody would stop, somebody would help me, somebody would save me, but nobody did. So I'm running up to the barn and I realize like I just stop and I realize there's nowhere for me to go. We live in the middle of nowhere. There's nowhere for me to go. And so as I'm standing here just feeling helpless, he grabs me by my hair and yanks me down into the driveway and is just dragging me up the driveway by my hair to his car, like trying to put me in his car. So we get all the way to the door of his car and I slip out of my hoodie and my grandparents are in the driveway now like yelling, Shiloh, stop, just begging him to stop what he's doing. And he's not listening because drugs just really, they just take your full self away. Like I really believe he was fully operating in the demonic at this point and he is incapable of stopping. So I slip out of this sweatshirt and I run for the house and I know where my grandpa keeps his guns. So I run in and I run all the way to the back bedroom. And at this point, my dad has pushed my grandparents down into the driveway. And so I'm just livid. Like at this point, it's done for me. So I grab my grandpa's handgun and I'm walking down the hallway. And when I pick up this gun, it was like time just stopped. Like everything was moving so fast. Everything felt so out of control. And the moment I have this, the weight of this gun in my hands, it was like time stopped. And I'm just thinking like, can I really do this? Like, you know, I love my dad so much. I don't want to do this. Why is he like, why did he bring me to this point? I'm so upset at this point. And so I'm walking all the way to the door and he opens the front door and I meet him there now holding the gun to his face. And he stops now too. And it was just like the world stopped in this moment. And like deep down, I never could have shot my dad because I loved him more than anybody in the world. I never could have done it. But I was hoping that in this moment, he would have realized like, wow, I've taken this too far, that this little girl, my best friend, would get to this point of pulling a gun on me. But instead, somebody with a narcissistic and addictive like personality and perspective, he starts guilting and blaming me. Like, how could you do this? I can't believe you almost shot me. Like, you're so disgusting. I can't stand to even look at you. And I was just like, nothing is ever going to get through to him. And so he wrestles the gun out of my hands. We're just sitting there on the porch looking at each other. And things get quiet for a second, and I knew I had to go with him. So I end up getting in the car, and we're back at the trailer on the hill where it all went down, and I'm sitting on the couch and he's just pacing up and down the living room, going over just like brewing out loud how disgusting I am, like how I should have just shot him. And finally he tells me, "I just can't even stand to look at you. Have grandma come to pick you up." And this whole weekend is really crazy. I don't really go into it a lot of the time because it was a long weekend. Like, this was one of the longest weekends of my life. So grandma comes to pick me up. I go back to her house and I'm like, thank God, like, grandparents' house is my safe place. Like, she'll make me a chocolate milkshake, cheesy potatoes. Like, I'm safe for the night. We're watching, you know, our sitcoms. Everything's good. So the night passes by and the next morning comes around and it's like 9 a.m. and he's already calling the house. And he's like, "I want my kid back." And I told grandma, I said, "I'm not going back. I'm not ever going back." And he's threatening my grandpa that, you know, they better send me back. And I told her, I said, "We need to go to the courthouse and I need to get a restraining order. Like, I'm done." So grandma drives me to the courthouse, which is a 20-minute drive away. It's in another nearby town because we all lived in a bunch of small towns. And so I'm there giving my statement, and I blacked all of this out because it was so scary for me. Like, and I think I was maybe around 12 years old, and it's so scary. Like, I'm talking to cops. I'm telling on my dad for the first time in my life. It was so scary. I just blacked it all out. But at the same time, I didn't realize that my dad had been calling my grandpa and threatening him. And he told him, "One of us is going to go out today." And so my dad is walking across the field with two guns. I think it was a handgun and a sawed-off shotgun. And my grandpa is sitting in the living room with his shotgun waiting for my dad to get there. It's like a full-blown Western movie takedown. And so because I happened to be at the courthouse giving my statement to get a restraining order, the police went to my grandparents' house to hear my grandpa's side of it because I was there. And so the police just happened to be pulling into the driveway the moment my dad was crossing the field with his guns. Like, it's crazy. My grandpa, like, he was hard. Like, he was not going to call the cops. He was going to go out in a gun war. But because I was giving, you know, at the courthouse, the cops show up, and my dad ends up going to jail. And now I get the restraining order. And at this point now, CPS, Child Protective Services, are watching him because all of this just happened. And this is how they ended up discovering that he was making, selling, and using meth. And that's what ended up leading him to going away to prison for the next 5 years.
Wow. That's quite a lot. And
yeah,
I want to ask more of a psychological question, because your dad was close to you when you were young, but like you mentioned before, he stopped when he started using meth. So a big chunk of your childhood up to that point, you were lacking the attention and the love that a little girl should get. So what did you do in order to get that? Because most people, when they don't get it from their parents, they look for something else. What happened with you?
Oh, yeah. By 12 years old, I was already popping pain pills in the bathroom at school and, you know, super boy crazy. And I had this boyfriend who was a few years older than me. He was like my texting boyfriend mostly at this point, but I wanted to meet him and like see him in person. And so on this night that, you know, I thought I was just going to go meet this guy who'd been my boyfriend for like a year, I ended up losing my virginity this night. And I'm not completely innocent in that, you know, like I snuck out and met him, but I thought maybe like I'll have my first make out or something like this. But I was 12 and he was going on 16, and he had already had sex lots of times and would hold that over me because he had an older ex-girlfriend and would tell me the things that they would do. And so I thought the only way to keep him or have his love or attention was through sex. And this is what I'd seen my parents obsess over. Like, my dad was definitely, I think his biggest addiction is honestly sex addiction, more than the drugs, more than the alcohol. I think it's sex. So for me, I saw that sex was like everything. And I thought that's what love was. That's how you kept somebody. But really it was the exact opposite. And we ended up breaking up after that. And so after that, I was just continuing to try to fill the void and rewrite that story by continuing to sleep around. And I really just started destroying my reputation. Like, I was such a sweet, innocent girl all the way up until that point. And then the seed of darkness got planted where I became darker. I looked a little bit more emo. Just had a terrible reputation at school, and school used to be my safe place, you know, away from my family and everything. And now I had basically no safe place left because of the ways that I was filling my voids and ruining my reputation.
Yeah. So you turned to boys to get the attention that your dad never gave you. And that continued onto college. So we're going to skip a little bit and go to when you first got to college, because that's when the next big change in your life happened. So why was it so pivotal, and what happened when you started going to college?